What's up, you guys? Welcome back to my Flickers of Fears, my movie review series. So the movie I'm talking about today is this is one I've been wanting to see for like a really long time because I really, really like seeing ones that were kind of, I don't know if this was like super, super divisive, but it did seem like there were kind of two camps where you either like loved it or hated it, or some people like loved it until the end, which they hated, which I'll get into in a little bit. Now this is a movie called Come True. Billed as a sci-fi horror, although I'm not sure I'd call it that, but I'm not really sure what else I'd call it. I guess it has some, like, sort of sci-fi elements to it. But this movie is kind of like a waking nightmare, I guess. So this came out in 2020. It's Canadian, and it debuted at the Fantasia Film Festival back in 2020. And again, it seemed, like, very popular at that festival, but also one of the more divisive ones. I kind of feel like most of the criticism I saw of it, like some people thought it was like slow and pretentious. I didn't find it pretentious. I don't know if that means I'm pretentious. I don't really know. I didn't find it that. I thought it was like really cool. And a lot of people really, really did not fuck with the ending. They thought that the ending like negated everything that came before it in the movie, which again, I didn't find that either. But everyone's opinion, you know, everyone's told their own opinion, obviously. However, me and like several other, I know that's not grammatically correct, I and several other reviewers, because this got actually like pretty much 80-90% like critical acclaim, I found this a profoundly unsettling, I want to say like almost a masterpiece. I loved this. I loved everything about this movie. I just loved the whole like vibe of it. I just got sucked right in. And I was just like glued to the screen the whole fucking time. I kind of feel like you'll be into this if you like, I mean, maybe you won't, but I kind of feel like if you're into David Lynch or if you're into, it's not super Lynchian, but if you see it, you'll know what I'm talking about. If you're into like Philip K. Dick type stuff or anything having to do with sort of like cinema of the subconscious type thing, like there's a lot of that like Jungian type of stuff going on. I think you'll be into it if you like that. So Come True was written, directed, edited, and mostly scored by Anthony Scott Burns, who is a filmmaker, visual effects artist, and also a musician. He has done like a bunch of stuff in the past. He actually was the effects supervisor on the 2012 movie, The Last Will and Testament of Rosalind Lee, which is great if you haven't seen it. He directed the Father's Day segment from Holidays, that 2016 anthology horror movie. And in 2018, he did a movie called Our House, which seemed like it got like a lot of critical acclaim. I don't think I've seen that, but I'll definitely be checking it out like after I've seen this, because like I said, I really, I loved this. I thought this was great. Okay, I'm gonna say that Come True, like most films, but I kind of feel like maybe more so with this one, this is much better going into it with absolutely like no foreknowledge of where it's headed or what's going on, because it's kind of like a mystery, sort of. So it's kind of better not to know what's happening. But, that said, in order to have a kind of a proper discussion about the movie, I'm gonna have to, like, low-key spoil some stuff about it. So, kind of be warned. This is your warning right now. This is also a movie that's definitely gonna need a second watch, and I'm actually kind of, like, I'm gonna rewatch it, like, soon, because I was really into this, and this is one of those movies that I want to like nerd out about, you know what I mean? And that's, I don't really find a lot of those anymore. But yeah, this is one that I definitely want to nerd out about and hear everybody's like theories and shit like that. So what we have, Julia Sarah Stone, she plays an 18-year-old young woman named Sarah Dunn. Now, at the beginning of the movie, Sarah, she seems like she's essentially homeless. Like, she sleeps on a slide, like, in the park with her backpack and her, you know, she has, like, a sleeping bag. And she has a house, but she seemed to, like, only sneak back in there when her mom leaves. Like, she watches for her mom to leave, and then she kind of climbs back in her window and, like, gets clean clothes and showers and, like, steals some toast and whatever, and then leaves again. So we don't know, and I don't think it's ever really explained, like, why she's avoiding her mom. And we don't know if she has a dad or anything like that. The only person you see, like, in one scene is, like, her mom. Maybe two scenes. But yeah, she's avoiding her and you don't really know why. So, it's also left unclear what year this is taking place in. Like, her mom's car, like, some of the technology, like, when you get later on into the sleep study portion of the film, like, the technology that they're using, shit like that, like, some of the fashions seems to kind of vaguely suggest the 1980s, maybe early 90s, maybe even late 70s. It's hard to tell. But Sarah has, like, a modern iPhone, so it's sort of like one of those things where it almost seems like it deliberately wants to cause, like, a sense of sort of, like, dreamlike disconnect, you know, from the very start of the film to kind of, like, put you off balance a little bit. And the theme of it, the vibe of it, really comes through more with sort of, like, this desaturated color scheme, which looks very cold and, like, sort of off-putting. There's a lot of use of, like, flickering, like, old school, like, you know, like, old school CRT monitors, like, that kind of imagery, and the sort of synthy score, which is, like, really eerie. So, like I said, it has, like, a weird 80s vibe, but not, like, an overt, like, neon, blah, 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 like, 80s vibe. It's, like, a really, it's, you'll know if you see it. It's, like, it's really cool. I really, really dug the vibe of this. So Sarah has been having kind of a hard time sleeping, not just because she's, like, sleeping in a park all the time or, like, crashing at friends' houses or whatever, because every time she sort of, like, drifts off or falls asleep, she has these really, really, like, disquieting nightmares that kind of consist of, I mean, the nightmare images in this are great. I just loved this whole, like, fucking thing. But they're almost kind of like, it's almost kind of like the camera's, like, moving down these halls, and there's, like, these weird, like, architecture type things, and there's all these, like, shadowy figures, like, parts of bodies and stuff, but there's always, like, a shadowy figure at the end with, like, these kind of glowing white eyes. Now, these nightmare sequences, I think, are, like, one of the highlights of the film, and they legit creeped me the fuck out. I mean, they're super, super creepy. They might not, like, do the same thing for you, but I found them, like, really, really intensely, intensely creepy. Now, because she's, as I said, essentially homeless, and she needs money, and she needs, like, a better place to sleep than the park, she sees this flyer, like, in a coffee shop for a sleep study. Like, you know, if you're having trouble sleeping or having nightmares or whatever, you know, we're doing this sleep study. It's $12 an hour. You just come there, sleep there. They're going to monitor you, and it's, like, 2 months or whatever. So she enters the study. Now, the true purpose of this study, as most scientific studies, they don't really tell you, like, what it's for. So she does ask, and she's just kind of like, hey, asking the technicians, like, what is this studying? And they're like, yeah, we can't tell you that. Which, like I said, that's pretty standard protocol and a scientific thing. Now, she does meet a handful of other people that are undergoing the study, 4 men, and then there's one other woman besides her, who's a woman named Emily. And she kind of asks, why more men than women? Why is it 4 men and 2 women? And, you know, the woman says, the technician says, I can't tell you that either. So, you know, that might be significant. I'm not entirely sure. But Emily shares a room with her. So basically what they do is they put these kind of, like, quilted white suits, like, on them, and they have, like, all these wires and things that are, like, attached to them, and then they wear this sort of, like, weird padded helmet. It kind of looks like a brain. It's kind of cool looking, actually, but it's a padded helmet, and that transfers the data to the scientists, you know, in the other room while the subjects are sleeping. So, like I said, they sleep there every night, and they monitor them, and then the next morning they give them, like, an exit interview, and then they go about their day, and then they come back the following night. So Sarah's doing this study. The first night or two go just fine. She actually feels rested for a while. She has nightmares, but nothing too upsetting. But one morning, after doing her exit interview with some of the people that are running the study, kind of like the underlings, like the main doctor that's running it, this guy with these big George Romero glasses, which I thought was very funny. I was like, I wonder, was that deliberate, like a deliberate homage to George Romero? Maybe. It does exactly look like George Romero's glasses. But he's, like, not there all the time, so I guess, like, his underlings, I guess they're graduate students or whatever, so maybe they're kind of, like, going against the protocol a little bit, or they're doing their own kind of shit. So this is one of those times. So during this exit interview, like, the people show her these photographs, like, they're kind of hazy looking, but they seem to suggest the same images that she saw in her dream. Now, for the most part, she's kind of looking at them, and she looks, like, a little bit uneasy, but then she tells them, well, I don't really feel that much looking at them. I can't really tell what most of them are. But then they kind of, like, turn over the last one, and she has a panic attack, because this last one, you can pretty much see, like I said, it's kind of hazy, but you can see that it's, like, this shadow figure that she's been seeing in her nightmares. So after she has the panic attack, she's basically like, okay, I gotta quit this study because you guys are fucking with my mind and I don't like it. Now, while this is going on, Sarah also appears to be being stalked by this young man with beard and glasses, who for a second I thought was Daniel Radcliffe. He looks like, what's like in the first scene, like she sees him like in a bookstore or something like that. I was like, is that Daniel Radcliffe? It's not. But it does like look a lot like him. Now she sees him like in the movie theater, she sees him in the bookstore. She's like, I think this dude is like following me, and that's like creepy as shit. But she soon finds out that this is another graduate student who's working on the sleep study who she's not met yet. His name's Jeremy, but he actually goes by Riff. He's named after like Riff Raff, like from the Rocky Horror Picture Show, because he's like the main doctor's Igor type character. So that's why they call him that. Now he seems to have a little bit of a crush on Sarah, which like I said, from a scientific standpoint, not very ethical to like have a crush on one of your test subjects, but that's neither here nor there. It's like he gets like way out of bounds later on, but yeah. So because he likes her, she's basically like, look, I'm not going to continue the study. I want to quit. It's fucking with my mind. And she's like, I'm not going to keep doing it unless you tell me what it's for. And he's like, I can't really do that. You know, I'm not really allowed to tell the test subjects what we're testing. And she's like, well, then I'm not coming back then. And he finally breaks down. He's like, okay, fine, I'll tell you. So he takes her in and shows her the monitor. It's like, basically what we do is we have this technology that, and you probably have figured this out just from the pictures they showed earlier, that that kind of transfers brainwaves into images that can be printed out. So they're like, we're basically like watching people's dreams is what we're doing. And specifically, it seems that Jeremy is really interested in studying this kind of like shadow figure, because he's like, this turns up in like a lot of people's dreams. He's like, including my own. And so we're trying to like, you know, figure out like why so many people from different cultures and things like that like dream about this same thing, because they find that interesting. Now, as the story goes on, this shadow figure seems to begin manifesting in the real world. Or at least there are a couple times where it seems to be seen, like, outside of people sleeping. There's one particular scene where it's not Sarah, but it's, like, two of the other guys that are doing the study. Like, they have sort of, like, simultaneous sleep paralysis sort of things, where they see the shadow figure, like, in their room, like, when their eyes are open, and that, like, transfers across so they can see the room like it is in their feet and everything like that, and they both see the same thing, like, at the same time, and it's, like, pretty freaky, and then, like, they sit up and their eyes are all white, and you're like, holy shit, what the fuck is going on? Is this thing, like, being pulled out of the dream? Is that really what the scientific study's for? We don't know. So Sarah also kind of sees it. She's like in a laundromat, and you can kind of see it in the background, but she doesn't see it. And then like it's implied that she sees it kind of like up in front of her. And then she sort of has another like episode, and she kind of like passes out for some undetermined amount of time. And then she gets woken up by this lady like in the laundromat who looks like she's blind. Like she has the white eyes too. And she says, these boys were in here and they took something from you. Like while she was out. Now she kind of like goes like that, and her cell phone is gone, and she's like distraught about this because that was kind of like her lifeline to her friend and stuff like that. Now from there, the movie starts to get like more amorphous. I mean, it's kind of, it's not surreal necessarily, other than the nightmare sequences, but you know that those are nightmare sequences, so it's not like surreal in the same sense that you might be thinking. It's because it's like pretty straightforward, but like the plot of it becomes more amorphous, the mystery becomes more amorphous. The nightmares start getting like more ominous. Like I said, you know, the shadow figure starts turning up simultaneously, like in the same way like in a lot of people's dreams, like, you know, shit like that. Characters kind of disappear without explanation. Like the line between reality and dreams becomes kind of more muddled and murky. You're not really sure what's going on. And you're kind of left wondering how much of what you're seeing is like really happening, or how much, or is the dream world like bleeding into reality? So if this gives you any indication of the vibe of what's happening here, the movie is actually divided into four chapters, and these are named after Jungian archetypes. Like the first part is named Persona, the second part I think is named Anima and Animus, the third one's called The Shadow, and the fourth one is called The Self. I think that's the order that they go in. But so this is like a very Jungian subconscious, collective unconscious type of thing, and you can't really trust anything that you see as like being real. So by the end, which people that didn't like this movie really, really hated the ending, Because they thought, as I said, that it negated the entire purpose of the movie, which I don't agree with, but that's fine if that's your opinion. But by the end, like, the events of everything that happened in the film prior to that have been recontextualized, and you really have to start to figure out where exactly the break with reality occurred, or, and this is kind of a spoiler, whether the entire movie actually took place inside Sarah's subconscious, or maybe even inside the collective unconscious. So that's kind of where they're going with it. So this movie is absolutely not for everyone, that's for sure. But for me, it kind of like hit all of my happy places. This was just kind of like, I don't know, this is just one of those movies that just hit every single thing. I was just like, yep, I love it. The whole kind of like look and feel of it like just drew me in right away. And the whole thing was so immersive that I just like couldn't even like look away from it. Just like the visuals of it was just so cool and like so stunning and like so my thing that, you know, I just was sitting there like watching it. And it's, you know, it's not a long movie. It's not short. It's 1 hour and 45 minutes, but I was just kind of like so, so into it. And it's definitely one of the eeriest movies that I've ever watched. It really kind of gave me this unsettled, kind of like weirded out sort of feeling. And even when there's like long shots, I didn't find it particularly slow or pretentious or ponderous or anything like that. Some people might, I guess, that depends on the person. But I mean, there are like kind of like language shots with not a lot of dialogue, but I don't know, it didn't seem boring. It seemed like there was always something moving, something happening. I really liked it. I was just kind of like riveted by the whole unfolding mystery. Cause like I said, I went into this not knowing a single thing about it pretty much. So I was like, what the fuck is going on now? What the fuck is this? Oh my God. So I'm going to say, even though some people did think the end was maybe like a cop out, I guess, maybe, I don't know. I didn't feel like that. I think that the ending to me seemed more like an invitation to kind of dive deeper into the story. And as I said, this is definitely one I'm going to be rewatching because there was a lot of symbolism in there, there was a lot of implication in there, there was a lot of kind of like dreamlike logic and shit like that, and I love to puzzle shit out like that. This is definitely a movie that, like I said, I'm going to be nerding out about, you know, and like reading other people's interpretations of, because it's just one of those things that really invites that kind of thing, and I really, really like that. So I'm going to say this is probably, since I've started doing the series, I've seen a lot of good movies on this series, I'm not going to say, this is one of the best ones I've seen lately. I really, really dug this a lot. I think the last one that made me this happy that I've interviewed on this series was maybe In Fabric, which I also adored. But yeah, this was a completely different movie to that, but I really, really dug this a lot. So, you know, your mileage may vary because like I said, this movie was like pretty divisive. So I don't know, like some people might like it, some people might not, but I loved it. So, you know, if you've seen it, let me know what you thought about it in the comments and we'll have a discussion about it. And that will do it for this Flickers of Fear. I will see you guys on the next one. Bye.